How many of y'all tried to read this from cover to cover? You'll start it in long about Leviticus. You'll go, what did I plan on doing with my day? And it's a thick book. It has a lot of words in it, and there aren't any pictures in mine. Lots of things in red, but it's real thin. And sometimes you look at it and you think, wow, what is the main idea in this book? Well, I'm going to give you a couple ideas. One is that we have a class called The Story. It meets right now at 10:45 in that room over there. Next week, you can come at 9:15 and then roll over that class. And they're giving a bird's eye view of this entire book, The Story. It's kind of like an abridged version of the Bible, the cliff notes, if you will. And it kind of gives you the main ideas. And I encourage you to attend that class. So that's for next week. But for this morning, you look at this and think, what is the big idea inside of this book? How do I get my hands around that? Well, we're not the first group of people that have wondered that. When Jesus was ministering amongst us, he was confronted by religious leaders left and right. And they came up to him one time, and this is recorded in three of the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. This is recorded in there, where these men came to Jesus and they asked him, what's the greatest commandment? What is the greatest commandment? Now, just so you know, there's more than 10. There's 613. So this is like a totally legit question. Which one, like when you're driving, which one really is the most important law while you're driving? Seems like people only pick one, and that is go fast, okay? But what is the most important law, they ask, in the Bible? What's the one that we really need to keep track of? And so Jesus answers them the question, just a real simple thing, and he says, you might remember this, he says, you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your mind, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. This is found for us in all three of the four Gospels. So it's an important thing. That's kind of rare too. You don't get all the stories repeated, but this one, it's in all of them. And what Jesus was doing was he was actually quoting them the Old Testament. He was telling them what Moses had spoken to them many, many years before. And if you have your Bibles or your screen, swipe to there or turn to there, to Deuteronomy chapter 6. And I want to show you this and break it down for you this morning. And we do this every year. We kind of go over some basic things in the life of a church. We go over what we call just the core values, the core things that we want you to know as a church, and we call it the Better Body Series. This doesn't mean that we're doing poorly. This doesn't mean that we need to do major overhauls. It's a reminder of what is important. And we're going to bypass some of the things that we've talked about in the past, but let me just touch on them real quickly. First of all, you're not the only one in the room. Have you noticed that? Have you? Okay. And so there are other people here. And we need to be, as a church, we need to be cognizant of this, that we need to go out of our way to say hello. You're a greeter at Odessa Bible Church. Well, I'm not on that ministry team. Yes, you are. We're all on the ministry team of greeting one another. And so we as a church body need to remember that we need to look across the aisle and say good morning. Because typically the human, if you watch the humans, we tend to get very narrow-minded. We get very focused on where we're going, and we don't see people around us. So I want to encourage you today, we're not going to do a whole sermon on this, I've done this in the past, to where you need to say hello to people when you walk in and when you walk out. If you're visiting to us today, we usually do that. We're a friendly church, but we have to be reminded to do that because we tend to think, coffee, are there any donuts left? Where are my kids? Where are my kids? Get away from them. Now, whatever the case is. But we tend to think just where we're headed. Where's my spot? There's a family that comes to our church in the first service. Their mission every Sunday is to sit in a different spot. It's fun because I have to find them. Like, I know about where y'all are going to sit. Okay, I take attendance while I'm talking. I know where everybody is. And their mission is to always find a different spot. And it totally messes y'all up. Because when they sit there, then you have to move, and then you have to move. And like, Tim, your family's in a different spot today. You usually sit over here. But you all have to find different spots. But you have to make room for people. And so sometimes I'll say to you, sit close towards the front, but park far. Sit close, park far. And in the past, what I've done, just to mess with you, is I've just taken out a whole row and then watched people just freak out at that. It's extremely entertaining for me because you don't know where to go at that moment. But we have to be intentional about being friendly. We have to be intentional about making room for people. We have to be intentional about parking in places so that people will have a place to come, because there's some people here today and in the first service who've never been here before. And so we're making a first impression. And we want people to love God, love others, and serve. And so if you can remember that first time you stepped into our church and what that was like, and try to put yourself in the shoes and the position of others who are doing that today. And so this is how we get better. I remind you of these things. And like the author of Hebrews says, let us push forward to deeper things in the faith. So I want to push forward a little bit into deeper things when it comes to you as a believer and us as a church. Because as a church, we will never become stronger than we are as individual believers. We have to work as a team. We have to be growing individually with these things. And so it's not that the church is friendly, it's that you are friendly, that you say hello, that you say good morning, that you do those things, and then the church does that. So I want to encourage you to do that. But I want to look at this next section here and talk about this great commandment. We're going to talk about four C's. Today is the first of the four, and that is this commandment to love God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all your mind, and to love others as yourself. It was given to us first in the book of Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy chapter 6. And if you look at that, we'll read what Moses said about this in verse 4. This is called the great Shema in Hebrew. This is the Shema, the great hear. Hear, O Israel, it says in verse 4. The Lord is our God, the Lord is one. Verse 5, you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, and with all your soul, and with all of your might. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up, you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. So let's go to that first part there in verse 5. This is where I want to start. You can do a whole lot of work in this that section, but I want to start in verse 5. Notice this command. Isn't it interesting that Jesus reiterates not just what Moses says, but that it is a command. The greatest commandment. God commands us to love him. Does anybody else find that odd? We're commanded to love God. Shouldn't that just come naturally? Right? You might think, well, how unromantic is that? I have to be commanded to love God. You know that there's only one person that you naturally love? You know who they are? It's yourself. It's yourself. Husbands in the New Testament are commanded to love their wives. It's a command. We're commanded to love God because naturally the person that you think about and I think about the most is myself. That's why we're always shocked at selfless love, at people who are laying down their lives for a brother. It's because it's shocking because naturally we don't live that way. And to be commanded to love God, you think, well, I'm commanded to love him. How? We should just do that. No, it's hard to love God. Can we be transparent this morning? When it comes back malignant, is it easy? Oh, yes, God gave me a malignant tumor. Woohoo, go God. Is that your first response? Is not your first response going, Lord, where are you? Lord, how come this happened to me? How come I'm going through this financial stress? Lord, why is that happening in this relationship? Why did I get laid off? Why do I have this sickness? Lord, and you get angry with God. It's often, I've never been commanded to get angry with God. Anybody else? Anybody ever get commanded to gossip? Anybody ever commanded to hold a grudge? These are things we do naturally, just all by ourselves. No help whatsoever. No one's ever commanded me to eat chocolate. I do it all by myself. I just walk towards the chocolate. I don't even realize I'm walking. There's a bag of M&Ms in our house. In my household growing up, those were called vitamins. Amen. I just naturally walk towards the M&Ms. They're constantly on my mind. There's a box of M&Ms. I got them in my stocking. And yesterday, I finally cracked them open. And I don't have to be asked twice. I naturally go to chocolate. We naturally gratify what we desire. And so when we're commanded to do something, it's probably because we don't naturally do it. We don't naturally love God. But we're commanded to. And so if you struggle with that because perhaps you've gone through a season of disappointment, maybe you're discouraged in your faith, maybe some things just aren't working out the way that you thought they would, and you might hold some anger inside of you and you're kind of mad at God, this is why he says, you shalt love the Lord your God. And that tells us something else. Not only that love in God is not natural, but you can command your emotions. You tell your emotions what to do. Oftentimes we're kind of told often that, you know, I just have to, this is how I feel. This, go with your heart, and that's translated, go with your emotions, go with your feelings. I can't help these emotions. Yes, You can. You can control those emotions. You are not just a bag of emotions running through your skin. You have control over those. We are commanded to control those emotions, and we are commanded to love certain things. We're commanded to do this. And don't you find it interesting, too, that he says love, the greatest emotion. Have you noticed this about music? We drove a lot this last Christmas break. We drove to Dallas and back. So it's 10 hours of listening to my daughter's country music. And I've noticed about, it's not just my, the whole car seems to like country music. And so we're listening to all this country music. And I even got a shirt, and it says Swifty Dad. And underneath it, it says regular dad, comma, just cooler. And when you listen to Taylor Swift songs, or if you listen to, I always get the name wrong, it's thank you, Morgan Wallen. When you listen to Morgan Wallen, if they were here the first service, I messed it up then. If you ever, Morgan Wallen, anybody listen to his songs? No one's going to admit it today, okay? No one's going to admit it. You know what his songs are all about? It's the love of alcohol, every one of them. And it's creatively written, but it's all about love. And if you listen to other songs from Swiftie to anybody else, even the greatest music ever, the 80s and the 90s, you listen to that music, it's all about love. It's all about love, whether it's the motorhome, the dog, the alcohol, or the girl. It's all about love, even country. It's all about love. That's because we're wired for that. It's the greatest emotion, our affections. And when you have your affections driving you, you'll run through brick walls to get that satisfied. Like today, there's a lot of people in our community today that are going to gather around a TV set at 3:25 and hope and pray with all of their affections that the Cowboys can get it done. Amen? Yeah. Right. They'll put the star right in the middle of their house. I mean, that's the big deal. And so, but those are your affections, and it's okay to have all of those, but we have our affections drive our actions. Because we're wired for love. And so what God says is, one, it's a command. It doesn't come naturally. Two, it is something that you can control. You have to control this. And three, you're driven by your affections. Your affections will create your actions. Your emotions will drive the motion. It will rearrange your life. So at the very beginning, Moses says to his people, you shall love the Lord your God alone. Love him. Notice it doesn't say obey. Now, obedience is a part of it. Don't get me wrong. And it's definitely part of this, the great Shema, chapter 6, 1, 2, and 3 talks about obedience. Obedience is there. But what drives Judeo-Christian faith is not obedience, it's affection. In a lot of our religions in the world today, obedience and fear is what drives the religion. Not so Judeo-Christian life and worldview. The biblical worldview is our affections for God drives our motion for God. We don't serve God out of duty. Isaiah 29 will even say, these people serve me with their hands, but their hearts are far from me. God wants your affections more than he wants your actions, but your affections will produce motion. That's how it works. And so he says at the very beginning, you're commanded because it doesn't come naturally. You're commanded to love him because sometimes that's difficult. But think of it this way. God, we love God because he first loved us. Oftentimes we look at, well, it's hard to love God because I can't see him. I sometimes don't feel him. Sometimes I'm disappointed and angry. And we look at it this way. Turn the tables there and look the other way. How hard do you think it is for God to love the human race? You know, he gave Adam and Eve everything they could possibly ever want, put them in a great place, garden, all kinds of food. All they had to do was not do one thing. And of course, they did it. They ate of the tree. They ate it. And then that's chapter 3. In chapter 4 of Genesis, you know what we graduated to after we stole fruit? You know what we did next? We murdered somebody. That's a pretty big jump, is it not? To go from stealing fruit to murder. That's a big step. And yet God still loves us. Romans 5:8 says, while we were in the very act of sinning, Christ died for us. And so it's sometimes difficult to love God. It might not be natural, but when you look at what God does for us, he loves us even though he knows. He knows where you're going to fail him tomorrow, and he still loves you. And so we're really just modeling what he has done for us. We love him because he took the first step towards us and loved us. So the command is to love him, and to love him with all of our hearts, with all of our soul, and with all of our might. And notice those three things of how they break down. This is an all-encompassing experience. Notice first, it's all of your heart. In the biblical Hebrew way of using this word, it includes the intellect. It's just not the emotion. That's why in some translations, it might say your heart, mind, soul, and strength. But it's because when it says heart in the Hebrew, he's referring to intellect and emotion. It's both. And so he says, you are to think this way. You are to have this kind of emotion in your mind and in your heart. You really can't separate these two things. We tend to love what we think, and we think about what we love. So when he says heart, it's not just loving God with your emotions. It's loving God with your mind, with your mindset. This reinforces the truth that we decide what we love. You choose what you love. You're not a victim to your emotions. You're in control of them, and we're supposed to fix them upon God. The next part there is all of your soul. And this is a little peculiar when you look at the word soul. It's kind of hard to nail down exactly what that means. What is it? We get strength, we get heart, but what is it to love God with all of your soul? The word refers to that part of you that makes you, you. This sounds silly, but it's important for you to understand this. There has never been somebody like you, ever. You are completely unique. It's kind of like your marriage. Your marriage is completely unique. There's never been a marriage like your marriage. Why? Because there's never been a person like you or your spouse who've gotten married. It's completely unique. You're going to do it differently than anybody else ever has. You are a unique person. You have different likes, different gifts, different abilities in a unique way that's uniquely you. And so when it says you are to love him with your soul, it's with your uniqueness and how God has wired you. Some of you are extremely intelligent and you love him with your mind. And so you love apologetics. You love defending the faith. You love drilling down deep into the word. And that's how you love God. And that's a powerful way to love God. Some of you are artists. And you love to draw and express through music or through pen or through poetry. And that's how you love God. That's unique to you. Some of you are servants, and that's just natural to you. And you love God through serving. It's unique to you. Nobody will do it like you. And you are to love God that way. You are a unique person. Don't try to love God like somebody else loves God, because they are different than you. Now, you'll have some similarities there. Just like marriages, there's some similarities. But there's nothing like your marriage. There's nothing like how you will love God. And so we get love your heart and your mind, your intellect. But when it comes to your soul, that's the concept. You are to love him in the unique way that you're made and how God made you. So don't try to love him like somebody that you've seen on YouTube or somebody else that has written. Love him as you are, because he loves you in your uniqueness. So love him that way. So we're supposed to love him with all of our heart, with all of our soul. Don't try to be anybody or anything else than what God has made you to be in Christ Jesus. And love him that way. And enjoy him in that way, because he sure enjoys you. If you're an athlete, love him with athletic ability. A teacher as a teacher. A banker as a banker. A doctor as a doctor. You get it? Love him as you are. Don't try to be anybody else. And then it says there, all of your strength. I like to read a man named Dennis Prager. He's a radio personality, but he's also a scholar. And so he writes commentaries on the first five books of the Bible. You may have heard him talk about this, but he talks about this section. And he says this word, all of your strength, literally translated, this word means to love him with all of your much. That's weird, is it not? I'm Dennis, what are you talking about? He says, love him, or if he could invent a word, he says this, love him with all of your muchness. It's not just like your prowess. It's everything about you and everything that you do. Love him, not just with your uniqueness, but with what you're able to do with your uniqueness. So I'm going to love him by being a pastor. Well, that's one thing you could do. I'm going to love him by being a missionary. Okay, that's one thing you can do. But love him as with everything. If you're a banker, love him with how you do banking. If you're a doctor, how you care for people. If you're a mom that never stays home but raises just kids, because they call them stay-at-home moms. They're not stay-at-home. I've never seen them stay at home. They're always running about. But you do it as unto the Lord. And you love him with everything that you do, not just what's on Sunday morning or at a Bible study or in a small group, but it's everything, all of your strength, all of your uniqueness, all of your muchness, everything. And the most shocking word in all of these, in these three categories, is the word all. Every bit of you. You can't live a compartmentalized life. You could try, it won't work. He says all of you, because the reason why I know it doesn't work is because I've read the book of Joshua and I've read the book of Judges. It doesn't work. The nation of Israel tried to compartmentalize God and love him just with a little bit and percentages of their attention, and they failed miserably. When you get to that section of the book of the Bible and you're reading through Judges, it gets so dark, it gets so wicked and so evil. It's because they started to love God with just parts of them, just parts of them. And so what Moses says and Jesus repeats and the rabbis begin to understand is that he wants all of you, not just part. He wants all of it, all of your heart, all of your strength, all of your mind, every bit of it. This is a command that's given in the Old Testament, translates and transcends into the New Testament, all of it. Obedience, yes, that's there. Fear, sure, we're commanded to fear God. But love, this is unique to Judeo-Christian biblical worldview. We are commanded to love. And we're built for this. Our songs, our movies, they all have the concept of love in the middle of it. My favorite romantic movie is Braveheart. It's about love. Right? Go back and rewatch it. You'll see it. It's about love. Saving Private Ryan, same thing, sense of love. Even the movie John Wick. Have you ever watched that? What does he love? His dog. Watch the movie. Some of you get it. You're just not going to answer. But yeah, it's love. It's in the middle of all that. We love it because it's the heartbeat of who we are. We love. Now, how does that work in a church? What impact do you think a church would have if they put that at the center of their individual lives? That you as an individual, this was your mission this year. I'm going to love God with all of my heart, with all of my uniqueness, and with all of my muchness. It's not just going to be something I do on Sunday. It's going to be in everything. I'm going to put God first in everything. He's going to rearrange my priorities. He's going to rearrange my life. Our world's going to evolve around him, and you guys know what this feels like from a tangible sense. You remember when your firstborn was born? It just blew your mind, didn't it? Everything changed. Everything changed. That's what you do when you love God. Remember when you met your spouse? Everything changed because you met her or you met him. You rearranged your life. I remember when I first met Melanie, I rearranged my life. I was working for a nonprofit, didn't make a lot of money, but if I want to take her out to dinner, that means I'm going to have to change how I spend my money all throughout the week because I want to spend time with her. You have to do that. It's your relationship with God. It rearranges everything. If you want it to work, you want to get the most out of this, you have to learn how to do this. I think that if we were to continue, because I think we do, if we were to continue to do better in this, this room wouldn't be filled with just 400 people on a weekend. It'd be filled with 500 and 600 because people want to be around people who love God, love others, and serve. That's what people are drawn to. And if you can be this in your office, if you can do this in your environment where you're making an impact in the lives around you, they're going to be drawn to Christ. They're going to want to know more about what you have because your world is revolving around him. And so a couple of application points for this. This is a decision. So I want to ask you to decide today, who are you going to love most this year? I know we're in church and you're going to say, we're going to love God because we're in church. We kind of have to say that. But really think about it. Because you can't love God and self at the same time. You have to choose one. Who are you going to love most? I'm going to put him at the center of my life. That means you're going to set your alarm clock differently. It's going to change how you drive. It's going to change how you buy stuff. It's going to change where you spend your money. It's going to rearrange your life. So don't just flippantly say, I'm going to love God with all of my heart, soul, and strength. No, push pause, cowboy. Let's think about that for just a minute. It's going to rearrange everything. It might be a tweak. You might have been doing that, but you might have something that has snuck into the middle of that, and you need to rearrange it just a little bit. There's no better time to do that than today, especially at the beginning of the year. So decide to love him. Make a decision. I'm going to love him. And then that next part is, I'm going to love him with all of me. I'm going to love him. And it works great when we start talking about marriage here in a couple weeks at this marriage retreat, because if you love God, it's going to impact how you love your spouse. It's going to impact how you love your kids. It's just going to make an impact all the way around. And so decide, who are you going to love most? Well, we're in church. I have to say God. Okay. But really think about it. Who am I, and how is that going to be reflected in the decisions that I make? I set my alarm. What kind of media do I consume? How often do I read my Bible? How often do I go to church? Where do I serve? It's going to change everything, as it should, because from that decision comes everything else. Trickles out of that. You know, that bike that we grew up buying or riding around when we were little, that little thing in the middle, all the spokes connected to that little thing in the middle, that little hub, it all connected to that. And if you stuck your foot in there like I did when I was growing up, boy, that hurt. Some of you feel that pain. Remember when your foot slipped into that? Oh, that hurt. But have you ever noticed, if that little middle part is not in the dead center of that wheel, guess what happens? Everything is just out of balance. It doesn't work right. That thing has to be right in the middle, and everything that's connected to it has to be connected to that dead center of that wheel. I look at our culture today, and we're wondering, how come everything is just kind of going cattywampus? It's not running right. It's all just kind of out of whack. Could it possibly be that maybe what's supposed to be at the center of that wheel is off? What the center of that wheel of our affections and our love for God and love for what our, with all of our strength, all of our soul and all of our heart is off. We're being pulled to one side of that wheel. And then we're wondering, how come this isn't spinning right? Maybe it needs to come back to the middle. And our affections need to get reset. And if we reset those affections, then is it possible that everything else begins to run just a lot smoother? And we can look at our culture at large and think, well, our culture is just going out of whack. Well, culture is just a reflection of what we as a people believe. And we as a church have to make sure that we're getting better at loving him with all, not just parts, of our heart, of our uniqueness, and our muchness. And if we as a church can hold that, then we can be a testimony to the world around us. This is how life works the best. Love him more than all else, and watch how God blesses.